Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
That's right, it's another episode of Popcorn Podcast with Lee and Tim, and it's time for Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
I'm Timmy Fland, movie buff.
And I'm Lee Livingstone, entertainment journalist.
And we love to talk all things movies. Now let's just recap Ghostbusters Frozen Empire for you, friends. In Frozen Empire, the Spengler family returns to the iconic New York City firehouse and teams up with the original Ghostbusters, who've developed a top-secret research lab to take busting ghosts to the next level. But when the discovery of an ancient artifact unleashes an evil force, Ghostbusters new and old must join forces to save the world from a second ice age.
Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is directed by Gil Keenan, from a screenplay by Keenan and Jason Reitman, based on the 1984 film Ghostbusters, written by Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis.
The film stars Paul Rudd, Carrie Coon, Finn Wolfhard, McKenna Grace, Kamal Nanjiani, Patton Oswalt, Celeste O'Connor, Logan Kim, Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Ernie Hudson, Annie Potts, and James Acaster.
Cast of thousands there. I can't wait to get to that point.
Cast of 1,001.
Exactly. Oh, so this is the first time that somebody other than a Reitman is taking over directing duties of a Ghostbusters
film. Gil Keenan stepped in.
Obviously, he was a co-writer
on Afterlife.
So he's very familiar with the story. He's a good friend of Jason Reitman's. They've worked together over the years and knew each other from way back in film school.
They go way back, don't they?
Yeah.
Like 2 decades worth of friendship and collaboration.
Yeah, and I actually spoke to Gil Keenan about this film, and you can check that out on YouTube or all good podcast platforms. But the balancing act here is furthering the story of the Spengler family, who we've gotten to know in Afterlife, while bringing along what's familiar and nostalgic. What did you think of the story?
Look, I had some fun watching this movie because it is grab the popcorn, shove it in and go for the ride. Mm-hmm. I found the story, just to lean on the sort of sprinkling of there are so many characters in this, the story was pretty uninteresting.
Wow. Yeah, okay.
I didn't know where the focus was in the story. Mm. I'm not really sure what sort of film it was trying to make.
Right.
Because there were so many subplots and characters they were trying to just shoehorn into this familiar world.
Well, let me help you out with that for a second there. There's this underlying push and pull of characters trying to find their place. Mm. I think this one is set 2 years.
A couple of years later.
Which is interesting when you think about it, because Phoebe is still just a touch too young to be a Ghostbuster in these dangerous situations. It's interesting parenting there, isn't it? Allowing her to be in these really dangerous situations and also be picked on by the mayor.
Yes.
I found that really odd.
He was really mean.
He was really mean, but it was also how quiet Carrie Coon as her mother and Paul Rudd as the stepfather were being during those moments. I found that was a really odd character choice.
Yeah, them written as parents, they weren't really parents, were they? Mm. And I found their involvement in the story specifically just quite footnotey, pushed to the side. Paul Rudd is top billed in this movie, and you could have fooled me. He barely has anything to do.
Yeah, I mean, he's now a stepfather to these children, and he's more in the family. He's trying to walk that line and parenting and also being a friend. Trevor's also there declaring himself an adult at every opportunity.
Which that got tired.
Did it, yeah.
I'm an adult now. I'm 18. Yeah. I can do these things. Of course, the trope of a young American wanting the keys to the car, you know, it just lent into all these familial cliches.
But Carrie Coon's mother character, she doesn't seem like one to conform to authority. You know, she's a bit of a nomad. She moves the kids around a lot. So I found it a strange character choice that she sort of stood in the background and let her 15-year-old get reamed out by this old crusty mayor who...
I haven't read him being described as a crusty mayor before.
Yeah, well, he's a bit of a dickless wonder, as they referred to him in the 1984 film. You might recognize him as the environmental protection officer from the first film.
That's who he was.
And now he is the mayor.
Okay. A dickless what? Wonder?
That's what Bill Murray's character calls him in 1984. Oh, God. Dickless.
That's so good.
It's very funny.
Very funny.
Winston Zeddemore is now running a research facility and developing new tech, so there's that underlying subplot there.
Yeah.
It's a bit like Jurassic Park for ghosts, isn't it? It's that age-old question of they're asking you if they can do these things, not if they should do these things. So they're containing ghosts in this facility and studying them, basically.
It's
science,
number one, which is really exciting. When that materialized itself as a plot point and a place to explore, I was both excited, but then on the side of caution, because of course they're setting up the story for disaster by containing all these ghosts and studying them and figuring out what they can do, not necessarily what they should do.
Yeah.
So I was like, uh-oh, naughty, naughty.
Naughty.
Can't wait for this place to absolutely implode.
Naughty, naughty. You shouldn't keep potato ghosts in your research facility.
There were some really random and cute little critters in this movie for sure.
Yeah. This film attempts to answer not just the call, but the 40-year-old question of what happens when the containment units get full.
Yes.
So, they're answering that plot hole from the 1980s films. What happens when you've been stuffing ghosts into this containment unit for 40 years?
Yeah.
It's starting to get a little crowded in there.
A little crowded, just brushing shoulders.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bit of elbow action going on in there with ghosts that they've contained for some 40 years.
Post-pandemic, it's just not safe, is it?
Yes.
Having people, even dead people, at close quarters.
There's not a 1.5-meter radius going on inside there.
There is not. They're basically living on top of a ticking time bomb at this point.
Well, it's also a theme of the film where things are genuinely falling apart. The classic firehouse that houses the Ghostbusters and all their busting ghosts. Things aren't working. Like the Ecto is falling apart. It's not doing as it's meant to do. The firehouse is kind of getting a bit crumbly. And this may sound a bit harsh, but is it reflective of the franchise? Is it kind of not being, is it not really structurally sound?
Is it spluttering along like the Ectomobile?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if you want to go that far. People still find such joy in these films. But Winston could have chucked them a few bucks from his really shiny, expensive research facility to get some repairs done to to the firehouse.
I was thinking the same thing. He's a rich guy and he's just watching the place fall apart.
Yeah. And where did he make his money?
I don't know. Do we know that?
I don't know. We've probably been told and it's just gone over my head.
Yeah. Just in a throwaway line.
He dresses very well, at least.
He does. He's a handsome man.
Let's talk about the callbacks for a second. We're not going to reveal too many because that's the fun of this movie, isn't it? I didn't think they could fit any more in after the abundance that were in Afterlife. And we talked about that as being a little bit of a negative from Afterlife.
On the nose.
A little. We said it was too much. Mm. In this one, they're throwing in some retro toy marketing and the music video clip. Ray meets a certain ghost from his past.
Yes.
The city librarian is still kicking around. John Rothman.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, the dickless wonder from the Environmental Protection Agency is now mayor, played by William Atherton. So there's a lot going on, and it's very situational, the callbacks. It's all to do with them being back in New York.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that Gil mentioned to you when you asked him this question about all the nostalgia thrown in, and he said he treated it environmentally. So when they return to the library and they go to these places on that we're familiar with, that we've treaded on over the 40 years, he obviously couldn't resist throwing in things that are familiar to the audience.
Yeah, and it is good fun to see those. Mm. It is really good fun to see those. But they have not only brought the Spengler family to New York, they've also sewn the flimsiest of threads to bring Lucky and Podcast along too.
Yes.
Was that necessary?
Completely not, because they didn't have anything to contribute.
No.
And it actually made me miss the great chemistry that the kids had in Afterlife, because they didn't have them working together in Frozen Empire. And I thought that was a real misstep, because we're meant to be nurturing and following along, quote unquote, the new Ghostbusters, I guess, in so many words. But they were so littered out around the story, littered around all the places they were going to, that it did not feel cohesive as a group, which I think they did successfully in Afterlife.
It was really wonderful to see the original Ghostbusters a lot more in this film. So, not a lot more, actually. Mm. I say a lot more, but it wasn't actually a lot more.
No.
But they were more heavily involved in some parts of the story.
Can we talk about that? Because it was great, I agree, seeing the gang all together. But they felt really randomly placed in there.
Mm-hmm.
I almost feel like having it be 2 years after Afterlife was a disservice, because it almost felt like there was a deleted scene or some context about what are the original Ghostbusters up to and how do they fit in to the fold now with the Spengler family living in the firehouse and whatever. Mm. For example, like Dan Aykroyd just, and he just felt like he was just muttering random shit throughout the whole film.
I'm going to disagree with you there, because I think Ray was a real important heart piece of the story.
Mm.
He brought this warmth and this joy that made you remember why you were so excited to see the Ghostbusters in 1984, and the joy that he had becoming a Ghostbuster, or his character had becoming a Ghostbuster back then. Mm. I think that joy and that sparkle was still there, and it was really nice to see.
Okay, I'm glad you enjoyed that part of it.
I did, but I agree. Bill Murray just kind of randomly showed up as well.
That's like,
what's he been doing? Yeah. And Ernie Hudson is
just this rich
Winston
dude.
Zeddemore was just there as well. He's just funding the whole thing.
Mm. Maybe as scattered as it did feel, Dan was quite good in it.
He was really good. And it almost seemed like they were banking on it just being enough that most of these characters were there.
Yes.
Including the kids.
God, there were so many characters.
Too many characters, I guess. Yeah, too many characters.
Too many characters.
The twist before the climax, which allows this villain, Garaka, which we haven't spoken about too much, to break through and become a real threat, I found to be weak.
Yes.
It hinges on a certain person doing a certain something, which is very convenient and also completely left field.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Without giving too much away, naturally. Yeah, the threat, it didn't even feel like the Ghostbusters or the team were threatened or really knew what the threat was. There was no real sense of urgency or like impending doom. It took actually a really long time for me to realize, oh yeah, there's meant to be a big bad in this movie.
Yeah.
It just kind of plodded along without much agency for so long.
I think they could have worked a little harder on the mythical history.
100%.
They did a little story. They did a little like reveal of who he is and why he is scary and all that kind of thing.
Mm.
But it's such a huge part of why should we fear this foe that's coming. He looks scary, therefore he is scary. The design was really cool.
Yes.
But the costuming even of the ancient heroes who are supposed to be battling him, vaguely Middle Eastern or Asian, like there wasn't a lot of story about who they were either.
Mm. It almost felt like an afterthought, this villain and the lore behind it that interrupted whatever they were trying to say and do with the other characters.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't executed so well. It was quite clunky in its exposition, and the feeling around it wasn't particularly high energy.
Yeah, I think the mythology of it was just not there, and it could have been a lot deeper.
Also, there's a really random character in this, Melody, who is a ghost that connects with the character of Phoebe. I've got a few things to say about that whole piece.
Save it for the character.
Save it for the character. Save it for that. But yeah, that bridge to the bad guy was also a really odd one as well. She was critical to the plot, but I was like, why and how? It was very confusing to me.
I did feel really triggered in this movie, by the mention of during that whole section where they're describing who this evil is and why he's evil and why they should be afraid of him. They talk about some ancient recordings, these recordings that there's one of Mary Todd Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln's wife, saying, fuck, because a moth flew at her. I fucking hate moths. They are evil bastards.
I didn't know
that. Oh, mate, if I see a moth, I'm out of there.
Oh, no.
I'm out of there. Never mind Garaka.
You can take him on any day.
I'm going to go see Godzilla and Kong. Mothra is coming at me. Oh, my God. Oh, I can't do it.
How come you've never told me about this?
I can't stand moths. They fly at you. They're evil.
Oh, my God. Okay, so this is a bit of a side note.
Yeah.
But when the Sydney Olympics were on many moons ago, 24 years ago. Yes. Shit.
Yeah.
What's going on? And all the stadium lights, it was like a news story every night about how many moths were flocking to Sydney. They were drawn to all the stadium lights out at Homebush at the Olympic Park.
Yes.
I
didn't go to any events.
You didn't go at nighttime?
I didn't go to any events.
Because of the moth plague that took over Sydney?
No. I was turning 18. I was too busy with my HSC and
That would have been a busy partying. Time.
Yeah.
Oh, good for you.
Anyway, we digress. We digress. The ending, though, not going to reveal too much, but it did leave me with a huge smile on my face.
Me too.
I came out of the cinema just grinning from ear to ear. It's executed so well. It harkens back to the New York celebration in the first film. It's kind of cheesy, that 80s movie thing where everybody cheers and slaps themselves on the back like in Top Gun. You know, it's just, you can be my wingman. You can be my Ghostbuster.
Be my moth wrangler.
Stop.
Sorry.
And then that Ray Parker Jr. song blasts out.
100%. Can I just talk about the ending? Because I really love that too. Mm. A bit misleading because I didn't really enjoy the film. I didn't think it didn't come together very well. But the ending, yes, made me feel really good. But just like how the film opens really strong with that New York City ghost chase.
Yes.
I was like, oh my God, I'm in with this movie. That was probably the most exciting and well-executed piece of the film, and it sort of fell apart from there for me. Mm. But then the end brought it back to that really exciting, high energy. I thought, gosh, if only the bookends of this film were explored to that same sort of energy throughout, it would have been a much more successful movie for me.
Right, okay. This film has a big significance behind the scenes, though. Jason Reitman, as we said, worked side by side with his father, Ivan, on Afterlife. And then Ivan passed away before Frozen Empire went into production. Mm. But they were able to share the story with him before he passed. And the themes of the film, you know, family taking hold of their heritage and legacy, it runs parallel with Jason Reitman continuing his father's legacy.
Totally.
And so Gil Keenan is now taking the helm of what is essentially a family legacy. And it's a huge responsibility.
Massive responsibility.
Gil himself is such a fan of the films. And he says that multiple times and in the press notes. He really, really finds the joy in these films. And I think that comes across on the screen too. Like the nostalgia is not to be discounted, even though we say it's a bit overstuffed.
Yeah.
It does bring you joy to see that kind of thing and take you back to a certain time. But is that enough?
Is it enough?
I mean, Keenan has said he wants to replicate that thrill that we all felt with the first film in 1984. Do you think this film has replicated that successfully enough?
No, and I think I've made that clear already. I don't think it had that magic spark and that feeling, and it really comes down to the overstuffed characters and the unfocused plot. There is a good movie and good pieces in there, but it's just that there's pieces of the good stuff rather than a full story.
Too unfocused, maybe.
Too unfocused, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
In terms of the style and the production design, though, I think it really did feel like an updated 1984 film.
Yeah, it looked really, really good.
It looked really, really great, yeah. And that was a lot to do with the special effects and the production design and the practical effects. They wanted to ensure the ghost look remained consistent with the 1984 and 1989 films. And they used old school film-based camera techniques to do that, which is really, really cool. So the special effects builds and operates any effect that is captured in camera.
See, this is what I admire so much about filmmaking, when they go above and beyond to offer an aesthetic experience, a tangible one for the audience. There is a lot of special effects in this movie, but I think the story of Ghostbusters all these decades on, it makes sense that the film looks as good as it does. Mm. And I think they really, really nail it in terms of where that money goes.
Yeah.
It goes on that aesthetic experience, and the fact that they put so much thought and consideration and filmmaking into it is always exciting to see.
And when you have visual effects supporting physical effects, you get the best of both worlds, don't you? And it does look better and more realistic, for lack of a better word.
Yes.
You can't really say realistic, but it does. It looks like it could be real.
Yeah.
Slimer, for example, iconic character who, again, was also just kind of there.
Just there, randomly.
But he was a big rubber puppet worn by an actor.
That's so cool.
And then they've put him into the scenes with these modern compositing techniques. So the previous films have never managed to achieve sliming in camera.
Mm.
So that's something they did for the first time here.
Yes.
Normally the camera cuts back to an actor and they're covered in slime. So you don't actually see it happening. But on this one, they developed a method of sliming Finn Wolfhard in camera. They had a self-contained pack that could do a slime splat on his chest. Try saying that three times fast.
Go on.
And on his back at the same time. Slime splat, slime splat, slime splat.
Nailed it.
Do you know what's interesting though? The recipe for the slime has stayed the same throughout 40 years, passed down through the generations of new teams. How cool is that?
Oh my God, I love this little factoid.
Very cool. They did a really cool thing with a tricycle that pedals itself down the street too.
Oh yes.
And that was done practically. It's so cute and it's creepy and it's clever. And a pizza that flicks itself off the table onto the floor. Again, that was practical as well.
Mm.
It's very cool.
You get authentic reactions from an audience. But the only way that that can happen is if I feel that the actors have that authentic reaction in camera. And it just translates so nicely to screen. You know, this is a bit of an aside, but I've somehow been served a lot of behind the scenes content on Facebook of all places, where it shows how something, a film was shot and then what it looks like to the audience.
I'm seeing a lot of that too. Maybe that's because of you.
Maybe. I'm just giving it to you vicariously. But a lot of the Avatar stuff has come up and I'm like in awe of those actors and what they actually have to act in and around. It is so bizarre to watch and then compare to how it actually translates to screen.
Yeah.
They're working with literally nothing and they all look ridiculous as well in what they're wearing.
Yeah.
So it must be so hard for actors in that space, but it's really heartwarming to see filmmaking like that is executed in Frozen Empire, because I think actors would really appreciate it because the audiences do.
Yeah. It's all down to the tiny details and the care that they put into the film, which is so obviously here in this film.
Yeah.
They really do care about this franchise. Yeah,
absolutely.
The Mini Puffs are back in this film and they're loaded up with all these really tiny details and ways that they're destroying each other and getting up to mischief, which is really fun to see.
They're like the original Minions, aren't they?
Yeah, true.
They're just running around causing a muck and there's so much joy just looking in the peripherals of the screen to see what some random little dude's doing over there that you may miss.
Yes.
But it's so much fun.
And stay for the mid-credits scene at the end, because you'll get a treat with them as well.
Absolutely.
Do you know they built life-size sculptures of Garaka's victims? So when he turns people frozen with fear, they actually built life-size sculptures of the actors to shatter.
Oh my God. That's really, really creepy.
And cool.
And cool.
Yeah.
Imagine if you were the actor and you're coming in on set going, there I am. Hard at work.
Frozen. Yeah.
That's really cool. Oh, I love that, Lee.
Another really cool thing is the suit designs have remained the same for 40 years.
Yeah, some of them do look a bit mothy.
Stop mentioning moths.
Sorry.
You just don't mess with a classic, though.
No, absolutely not.
There you go.
It's really exciting to see them in the get-up, too.
Yeah.
It feels really good.
Let's talk about our characters and actors. McKenna Grace, is the obvious heart of the film as Phoebe trying to find her place in the world, in the family, in the Ghostbusters. Ghostbusting is where she feels at home.
Yeah.
But she's only 15.
Yeah, I didn't realize actually how young she was.
But she has some really kick-ass moments in this.
She is good. She's also quite transformative. She doesn't, like, her character doesn't look like her as an actor. And I always forget who it is because with the wig and the glasses and all the rest of it, she's really, really good, very convincing.
Yeah. Little baby Spangler.
Little baby Spangler. It's that she leans into that classic sort of coming of age piece, doesn't she? Because she, as you said, she wants to try and be part of the gang, but she's always been pushed away. And of course, when teenagers get told no, they rebel. And so she tries to find ways to get involved and get her Ghostbusters fix, if you will.
Finn Wolfhard is the comedic relief in this film. The amount of times, as we said, he mentions that he's 18 and an adult is just too much.
Too much. It was a real shame because we caught out Lucky and Podcast not being utilized very well in this film. And I don't think that Trevor Finn Wolfhard was used very much here either.
No.
Obviously, Phoebe is the, I guess, the central focus of the story, but it just meant that there were all these other characters were just footnotes, and it was a shame that the kids were collateral damage to that focus elsewhere because I kind of wanted to see them do more because they were a great bunch of kids, and I thought this is where the franchise was going, that they were going to be lifting them up, but they kind of got put to the wayside, I feel.
And I guess the central thing is Phoebe's budding friendship with Melody, the ghost, who had incredible special effects, by the way. We didn't mention that. But
gorgeous.
She perished in a house fire or something, or a tenement fire. And she's just got these light little flames like a Christmas pudding, almost just kind of lapping her.
It's a perfect way to describe
it. I think I've heard it described like that, but
blue flame,
So they're friendship or romance?
Okay, so this
you want to talk about this?
This is what I want to talk about because is Phoebe meant to be queer? Because I got vibes of her and Melody, you know, having this friendship, but maybe there was something more. But it was so frustrating because it never went there and it was just teetering around it. And I thought, we don't need it shoved in our faces. But also, it could have been a really beautiful synergy to her feeling on the outside and not involved, but she's also trying to figure out who she is as a person. And those queer sentiments were there, but they were so minimal that it almost was pointless that they were highlighting it in some way.
And I guess it can be a little bit frustrating, a bit like virtue signaling to do something like that and lean into it without properly leaning into it. Like it's a little bit woke, I guess.
A bit woke, but also some of the dialogue alluded to the fact that there was something between them, but they just held back too much. And it was so frustrating to me. I just don't think they should have gone there at all if they weren't going to deliver for the character.
They weren't going to commit.
Yeah, they weren't committing to it. Too scared, teetering around. Was their scenes missing? It felt really unbalanced.
Right, another couple, Carrie Coon and Paul Rudd, as we mentioned, as the co-parenting
duo,
former beasts from Afterlife.
Oh, yeah, there was a nice mention of what they got up to in Afterlife in here is like a throwaway line, which is actually quite funny.
They have some good chemistry.
They do.
Really good. But underutilized, as you said.
Underutilized, a real shame. Especially Paul Rudd because he's so freaking funny as an actor and he just wasn't used to full potential. Like, I just love him so much.
I guess there just wasn't room.
That's true. It was too packed.
Too packed with people. And I have seen an interview out there where they talked about not wanting to bring characters back unless they could really invest time in them. But it feels like they have done that.
Yeah. I mean, look, the intention is one thing, but the delivery is another. There was beautiful intention behind everything about this film. There were some really nice moments and Gil took good care. It just didn't land.
Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd and Ernie Hudson. Iconic trio. I love how Bill Murray walks the line between doofus and intelligent scientist. Like there's something about his character that is just really cool.
It is cool. It's so cool, in fact, that he randomly puts on his Ray-Bans inside at night just for the sort of glass flick-off moment. I thought, where did he get those sunnies? I don't know. Yeah. He pulls off weird, wacky, silly stuff.
Yeah.
He probably wasn't even a director's note or even written in the script. He just went to his trailer, put his glasses on, and thought, you know, I'm just going to wear these for 5 minutes and then take them off and Bussum goes.
They all just slip into these characters like a pair of old shoes and wear them so well. Dan Aykroyd, as I said, really brings that joy and wonder about the afterlife and what they do to the film. Mm. Ray's retired, but he still loves it. He still wants to get back out there. I don't really understand Winston's motivation, though.
Mm.
Ernie Hudson.
Yeah.
He's bankrolling this research facility. He's actively working in this space, so it seems. But then at some point in the film, he's yelling at everyone for busting ghosts.
Yes.
Or wondering why they destroyed property with a proton pack. Like, mate, you destroyed your fair share of New York City back in the day.
Mm.
Have some compassion.
Yeah.
Have some empathy. Like, what the hell? He's just tearing poor Phoebe apart, going, what were you doing? Why did you destroy city property? Like, why do you think, mate? I didn't just go out there to destroy some shit for the hell of it. I was busting your ghosts for your research facility.
You're
back
welcome.
The hell off.
That was the missing retort in the film. That would have been great.
But it was very contradictory.
Yeah, it was quite jarring because you thought, where did this come from?
Yeah, why is he the bad guy?
Mm.
The dickless wonder mayor is there to be the bad guy. You don't need Winston doing it.
Exactly.
That, I found that strange.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And no Sigourney Weaver.
I know, so sad.
In an interview, Gil Keenan has said that they, as I said, they only brought characters back if they were able to have real story arcs.
Mm.
I don't think Lucky and Podcast, like,
no.
No.
But also they tended to bring everyone back but Sigourney Weaver. So they didn't really follow their own formula, no, like we've mentioned.
Yeah, true.
So it just left this really big gap going, but why? Like, yeah. You could have just thrown her in. Like, you absolutely could have just thrown
absolutely.
Her in.
Absolutely. Well,
they threw everyone else in.
They threw in James Acaster as a researcher at Winston's research facility.
Mm.
Celeste O'Connor as Lucky is being woefully underutilized in all her films recently. She was in Madam Web.
Oh, my God, of course.
And we said she was woefully underutilized in that film too.
Oh, everyone was woefully underutilized.
No, but I mean, give this girl a chance. She's really good. Also adding in Kumail Nanjiani.
Yeah, completely pointless, just quietly.
He would have been more interesting and had more screen time if they didn't have all the other characters in there.
100%. Because he's quite important to the story, if I said
he is.
Pointless, but hear me out. Like, he is actually crucial, but he comes in so late into the piece where you're reminded that, oh, yeah, there's this plot line. That
and
we
then
have
it
to
feels
follow.
Rushed.
It feels so, so rushed.
He does play a somewhat pivotal role.
Mm.
He's a slacker who holds the key to their salvation. He is quite important.
But again, just underutilized, underdeveloped, and again, just another name that you have to remember in this movie that doesn't really deliver.
I think we've said underutilized just
a few
too many times. Underutilized bingo. Here we go. Let's wrap up, Tim.
Okay, let's do it.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
So Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is harmless, fun time, but you never know where to focus your attention with a story that lacked direction, packed with, here it is, way too many characters and countless jokes that never seemed to land.
Did you think it had too many characters?
Oh, way too many characters.
Oh, I didn't pick up on that.
Well, look, actually, let's just go back and just reiterate that point, shall we?
Sorry.
No, all good. Overall, it sadly lacks soul and doesn't offer anything new or exciting for the franchise to keep going. I think it's time we stopped calling the Ghostbusters.
No!
I'm so sorry.
No.
Okay. Very strong reaction.
That was very strong.
It was. It's fine. I'm going to rate Ghostbusters Frozen Empire 2.5 popcorn kernels, Lee.
Okay. Well, by the law of diminishing returns, Frozen Empire is not as thrilling as Afterlife, partly because there was so much anticipation and excitement surrounding that movie and the return to Reitman's version of the franchise. It was never going to beat it. okay, because it's comparing apples and oranges.
Totally.
And stuffing so many characters in leaves little room to really appreciate them or explore the action and adventure in a way that does the creativity behind these ghosts and the threat they pose proper justice. It's contradictory because as wonderful as it is to see the Easter eggs and feel the nostalgia and the love this franchise brings, there's also a sense of trying too hard to follow a formula. The special effects team here have nailed the brief, though, and visually Frozen Empire and leaps off the screen in a way that's fun and entertaining and reminiscent of the 80s without feeling dated. So they've nailed that. I'm going to give it 2.5 popcorn kernels out of 5. Mm-hmm. 2. I gave Afterlife 2.5 as well.
Okay.
But I feel 2 is too harsh because, you know, it's a new filmmaker taking over the legacy. Mm. And as I said, it's a bit like comparing apples and oranges. I love that they're back in New York City,
yes,
the home of the Ghostbusters. It's good fun.
It gets a lot of things right. It does. And actually, that was such a beautiful summation of what the film offers and how it made you feel.
Mm.
And I do think that fans of the franchise are really going to get a kick out of this one.
Yeah.
Like, it's still worth seeing on the big screen, especially in how it comes together visually.
Give me another one. Right. I'll take another one.
All right. We'll round it out with
and an animation.
Oh, yes.
They're working on the animation.
I know. It was a great scoop that you got out of Gil, giving you a bit of a tease on how it's looking. And see, that's the thing. He's so invested in this story, the passion that he elicited in your conversation. Like, it's there and it's infectious.
Yeah, it is.
So I'm excited to see what he brings.
Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is in Australian cinemas from March 21. Make sure you go and check it out.
As always, friends, thank you so much for listening.
We'll catch you next time.
Come and join in on the conversation. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at Popcorn Podcast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.